If you weren't born with a trust fund, but feel like you should have one, you are in the right place. Welcome to Old Money, a podcast dedicated to breaking down the new rules to living well and getting wealthy. I want you to build a life and a legacy that feels rich in every sense of the word. And while I don't have any insider trading secrets, I do have some secrets about how getting rich is actually an inside job. I'm your host, Amber Evenson. Now, let's get into it. Hello, rich girls. Welcome back to Old Money, the podcast for women building the trust funds they wish they were born with. I'm your host, Amber Evenson, and I'm so stoked to be joined with one of my most favorite people today. Like, you know those people when you just get on a call and then all of a sudden the time flies by because you've just gone totally off the rails talking about everything between money and life and business and all the things? This person is not just a friend of mine. She is a super talented CFO, former CPA by background. She's running a boutique firm, helping business owners with their financial strategy. And she is the host of the Keep What You Earn podcast. It's also the very clever name of her business. I'm so proud to introduce my friend, somebody I admire so much, Shannon Weinstein. Shannon, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I've been waiting for this. I love some old money and I love chatting all things money and business with you.
Well, I love some Keep What You Earn because I'm always listening to your podcast. It's so funny. Shannon and I met 2020 in a mastermind. I think that's when it was.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we kept in touch over the years and I saw what you're doing on Instagram in here, but I really felt like we had more of a relationship than we did probably because I was listening to you 3 or 4 times a week on the Keep What You Earn podcast. And so you were always in my ear. So we had kind of like a parasocial relationship, essentially. I was just obsessed with you.
I was following along too. So it's funny because when you're virtual friends, like you have these relationships and you're like, I feel like we're better friends than we actually are because I feel like we've already like we're at third date conversation and we haven't even really met each other. It's super fun.
That's the truth of it for sure. So Shannon, why don't we start with kind of like a big picture? Can you just tell the people who you are and what you do?
For sure. So as you mentioned, so I'm a CPA, I'm a CFO. I am running Keep What You Earn, which is a fractional CFO firm. And I'm proud to say I basically, not that I don't identify as a fractional CFO, but I have hired people in the team. So now I run a fractional CFO firm. That is what I'm standing in, is I am the runner of the firm. And I basically wanted to break free of working in public accounting, working tireless hours, high stress, corporate environment. I wanted to build wealth my way, which was, you know, doing it in the service of others in a better way. And also, honestly, enabling people, business owners and the like, to better manage their money because, you know, it should be kind of a right, not a privilege, to have financial knowledge. And we're not doing a good enough job of that in our systems, in the way that we rely on, you know, public education, so on. I said, I'm going to make it my mission to help people break this down and do it simply so they can understand it better and they can become open to it, which is, I think, what the podcast is achieving.
100%. And you nailed it right there. And it's the feedback that I get too, is that people feel overwhelmed by financial information. Yeah. It's so much jargon. It's so bogged down. It's all this gatekeeping. And you are the queen of an analogy. Like we're going to take a tally on this podcast for how many analogies you can squeeze out of Shannon, but you explain things in such great ways that are so relatable. So if you're listening to this podcast right now and you're not an entrepreneur, don't worry. This podcast is not just for entrepreneurs or business owners. You are going to learn so much. And we're actually going to talk about how to become the CFO of your life. Shannon will tell you what she does for her clients, but she's going to break it down for you. So let's go back to the very beginning when you were in corporate. We have two very different paths to business. Why don't you tell us about how you got started with Keep What You Earn, what it was then, how it's evolved, all that good stuff.
Yeah. So I think really what it came down to was I was working full time and I wanted to do this on the side and see if I could make something of it. You know, it started as a different company. It started with a different niche. But what we did was I built it with the thought in mind of, well, if I can do this on the side, I can make a little bit of money. I could free up my time and spend more time with my husband and maybe start a family, maybe spend more time with the dog, like just have more choices on what I wanted to do. So I did this in 2019. And what I ended up doing until 2021, 2022 is I was trading time for money and just labeling it a business. I was doing the same thing I did in corporate. I was hustling where my worth, my value was based on what time I could spend working on clients. So, mm-hmm. you know, in this billable hour culture where I came from, where you're only as good as how much time you can spend working, that mm-hmm. was a really hard thing to shake. And I think a lot of people struggle with that is when you're trying to build wealth, when you're trying to grow something, that you have to decouple that from the effort it's taking you. Like, you don't have to earn every dollar with every hour of your time. Like, you have to earn it, but you don't have to labor yourself into it. So that was a really hard thing for me to overcome. So the first few years were really about trading time for money and then realizing that time is a limited resource. And I was capping myself on my earnings without hiring more help or without, you know, expanding my horizons to charging more money for a higher value service. And I really morphed into the fractional CFO just maybe three or so years ago, because I realized that that's really not just where the money was, but that's where the high value is and where we really show up with enthusiasm for our clients versus mm-hmm. the accounting and bookkeeping I was doing and the tax returns at scale that just weren't really lighting me up. It was the, as I put it, the, you know, April 15th, one night stand treatment. I was getting the, I was like the carry to the Mr. Big. I felt like I was getting tossed around by our clients. And then I realized, I was like, I want to be like Aiden material, which now, like, not super, you know, relevant. But I always said I wanted to be the reliable person that would always be there during the course of the year and not just the April 14th phone call for a state of emergency.
Right. And that's so important too. I want to just touch on one thing that I think you're illustrating for the audience, which is not only are you, you know, building a business and you're building it for yourself, but there's a wealth factor there and that you're doing what you want. You're working with clients that you want and you're working in a way that feels fulfilling for you. But when you were going from that transition from corporate to starting your own company or going solo, what did that look like? And how did you know when it was the right time to go on your own?
Yeah, so I pulled out my favorite trusty tool, which was the cash flow forecast. So here's the thing. Like, I'm a CPA. I have these things in my tool belt, but it's just not that hard. It's like the Allen wrench you get with IKEA. Like, everyone knows how to use this thing as long as you have it. So here's the thing. You have to just map out, like, what's in my bank account now? What do I need in terms of funding my lifestyle? And, like, do not apologize for that. Do not bake in cutting back. Just put, like, the realistic, like, what will make me not check my bank account before I go to the store? You know, mm-hmm. what will make me not worry about this? Put that plan together of what you're going to need. Then you go, okay, at the rate I'm going, and in my case, this was starting a business and this was shifting how I was earning my money. This could look like anything. But mm-hmm. as I was shifting how I earned my money, I said, okay, what am I going to earn this week, this month? And then when are we going to tip the scale? Like, at what point will I be making enough to cut the cord of the other income source? And the funny thing is that it's not linear. We're like, oh, at this point, I can just quit my job and I will have made enough money. For you to make enough money in your business, you can't also be working full-time. Like, there's, mm-hmm. if we were capable of doing that, we'd all have two full-time jobs. So, like, mm-hmm. it was just not going to happen. And I was going a little crazy. I was working like 7 to 11 on both sides of the AM and the PM. And then I was like mm-hmm. sandwiching my work day and I was dropping things left and right. Like, it was not pretty. So what we had to do is figure out, at what point am I hitting a trajectory where it would be unreasonable not to expect us to hit this income level by, say, this was in this case, June 2022. I was saying, hey, by June 2022, I'm going to be at that trajectory. I'm going to be there. And me and my husband talked about it. It was just an open conversation. That was the other thing, was being willing to just look at the numbers objectively and not make it emotional and not make it about this is what I want or I'm going crazy. I need to do this. But I did go to my husband in December and I said, hey, we have tax season coming up. And the idea of doing a tax season with these like 80 plus clients I had plus working my full-time job makes me want to go vomit. Can we talk about this? And I said, I have more clients. I'm going to get more clients this season. I said, give me until June. Let me quit now. Like, let's talk about if I quit now, give me till June and I will prove. I had a very clear goal. I said, if I haven't gotten to this point by June 2022, I will find another alternative for income source, but this ain't it. But I need to be free for this tax season. And this was seasonal because it was my type of business, but mm-hmm. you know, it could be like anything where I say, hey, for this season, let me go prove it. Let me go sprint. Let me go hustle with no other restriction. And I fully dedicate myself and prove what I can do. And we had this sort of boundary on it because I wanted to see what I could do with a deadline. and give myself that accountability and that discipline. And then we were able to accomplish it by May, and the rest is history. Like, I basically had the permission I never needed to quit. So
I love that. I mean, the way that I'm hearing you describe it is it's very systematic. It's very strategic. It's very transparent, especially with your partner. Just to give some context to the listeners, and I've talked about this on other episodes, I was not strategic. I was not organized. I did not start this business with any sort of plan. So there are multiple ways that you can fall into success. I'll say that. But I'll tell you what I did differently, which was I was working in my corporate job. And I don't know, Shannon, I'd love your opinion on this too. Is there just a cohort of us where things get so bad where we're like, we'll do anything but this, and then we choose entrepreneurship and it can sometimes be harder?
Like, you basically trade a full-time job with another boss to a full-time job with an invisible boss, which is just your ego, and all the demons in your head are now your boss. And it's a little scary because now you actually can hear them. It's definitely like that.
So things for me, I was just in over my head. I was too green in my role, and I spent a full year saving money. So living very lean. I got a roommate, which is something as an only child was very painful for me. I was hustling on the side. I was doing all this stuff, and I just stashed money. I basically saved enough money that I could live on for like 9 months. And I quit my job being like, I'm going to take a sabbatical. Well, within 2 months of doing that, people started calling me. Can you help me with this project? Help me with that project. And I was like, oh shoot, I guess I should open a business bank account. And then all the money that I made on top of what I had saved was kind of extra savings to give me more time or more lifestyle. And within 6 months, because I didn't have any distractions from my other job, I had established a full business, an agency model, and was doing everything from website to strategy to social media management to full-on marketing services. So, you know, again, I didn't have a cash flow plan. I was just living as lean as I could, trying to figure it out along the way. And then there was this inflection point where I was like, oh, now I really need to figure it out. And that's when that kind of CFO mindset has to switch on. And I want to talk about that, especially in, even if you're not trying to start your own business, just in your personal life, the CFO, I would call it like job description, so to speak, is very different than a CPA and a bookkeeper. So Shannon, can you break those down and then relate them to different activities people might do in their day-to-day life?
Yeah. So the way I look at this is I actually compare it to, like you say with the analogies, I think I've already used like four. The the one I use is driving a car. So when it comes to your goals, that's like programming a destination in your GPS. You say, I want to be at this level of wealth by X age or whatever. You should have, even if that's not set in stone, you should just have something you're driving toward. Like, where even if I set this as a plot point in my GPS, I'm heading in the direction I eventually want to be in. I don't know exactly where on this block I'm going to go get coffee, but let's just go downtown and I'll figure it out, you know? So we have to have a ballpark area of like where we're trying to get to. Like, are we going north, south, either east or west? Now, from there, what we want to do is figure out who needs to be in the car to help us get there and what type of help we need. And I look at it like there's the dashboard in front of you. There should be somebody sitting in the front seat as your navigator with their Waze open and telling you where the police are and where all the traffic cops are. And then like you also have to have all these tools to get where you're going and to ensure you get there safely and efficiently. So very similar to that with your financial goals, you've got to be stacking your team up with the right tools. And if you know what you're doing, great. If not, that is okay. And that is normal. And that's why we have people who studied this stuff. I always say, I got a degree in this for a reason and passed a 6-month exam. I go, if you guys could do this yourselves, then like, I wasted a crap ton of money. So I'm just telling you that like, that's normal and it's cool. Like, we study this for a reason. But the cool thing is that you have all these choices. I guess it's a cool thing or it's a burden, but you have all these choices on how to manage it. And I think the biggest thing is being aware and not handing your keys to your accountant, to your CPA in that car and saying, hey, here are my keys. I'll be in the trunk. I'm gonna go shut the lid. Take me where I'm going. I'm gonna go to sleep, whatever. And then next thing you know, you don't like where you end up.
Like, that's not that's called kidnapping.
Exactly, that's called kidnapping. Also, you don't like where you end up because you had no say in the different turns that were taken. You got to see none of the scenery on the way. You felt like whiplashed, been bumped up and down on speed bumps. Your head hurts. And you're like, I'm not any happier right now. It's like, yeah, because you wouldn't look at where you were going. You decided to stay in the trunk, and you gave someone else the keys. So my biggest thing is when you're going to be looking at your wealth journey, you have to hire people or enroll people into or get people to advise you. But the best roles to have is a couple of things. One is you have somebody who's been there, done that, that can advise you, that maybe has a little bit more knowledge, a little few steps ahead from where you are. That can be parents, friends, anybody. They don't have to be professionals, just somebody who can help kind of steer you in the right direction. Mm-hmm. But then once you have a general direction of where you're going, you want to be looking at having some type of professional in your corner. And I would say CPA or tax pro, their job is to publish the story of your taxes. Their job is typically, unless they offer this and you pay for it, their job is typically not to co-author the story with you. Mm-hmm. Their job is to tell you, maybe help steer you on the tax side, but they're not looking at your overall wealth picture. They're looking at one dimension of your wealth picture, which is your taxes, and they're specializing mm-hmm. in that. You ideally have somebody helping manage your finances and budget. That could be you and your partner. That could be your partner, or it could be somebody you actually hire to help you do that. Nothing's mm-hmm. off the table if you really don't want to do it. And then you also have your financial advisors and folks who can help you with your broader wealth journey of building up that wealth and your goals. But I think what you want to do is have people have family offices and things like this too. Like when you get to that level that people can help manage that. But I think in the meantime, you just want to stack yourself with the right people that can advise you on the areas you have the biggest blind spots. And that's going to look different for everybody. You have to cover those blind spots. You can't just like turn away from them.
I love that analogy of being kidnapped in the trunk, because I think that's what a lot of people do when they feel disempowered about money. They're like, oh, this person's educated. They know more than I. So I'll let you take over. And we both, you know, with the hands up, like, don't attack me. But it's such the wrong approach, because when you say like a CPA, for example, that's not even somebody who's going to advise you throughout the year on different things that you could do to minimize your tax burden at the end of the year. They're literally just filing the taxes for you sometimes, right? So depending on the level of service. But yeah, and I think a lot of people say, oh, well, you know, my dad's CPA has always done our taxes, so I'm just going to give them my stuff there. And maybe your parents have only been W-2 employees and you're now a solopreneur or an entrepreneur or whatever you're doing, and this CPA has no expertise in that. So I'm a big fan of when you're saying like getting all of your people together, are we upgrading? Do we have the right tools? Does Waze even work in my area? Or am I a Google Maps girly, right? Like, I think that's super important depending on where you are, whether you're a business owner or you're just W-2 or you're a stay-at-home mom managing the finances of your house. You got to have the right people in the right seats.
Yeah, you got to ask for the right help. And part of it too is just understanding where your strengths are and where they're not. And going back to the CPA thing too, they may or may not be helping you year round, but what you have to be able to do is order off the menu for what you want. So here's the biggest issue I see. Like, if you're not getting what you want out of your accountant, out of your CPA, the biggest reason for that is it's like going to a restaurant and there's no menu and there's a guy standing behind the counter going, what can I get you? And you're like, I don't know. Like it says burgers on the sign. So I guess you have burgers here. Like maybe. And then this is literally how CPA firms operate. It drives me freaking crazy, because you guys don't put a freaking menu up and you expect people to order what they need. And the problem is that the accountants think you know what you need and know how to order it. And then you go, well, you're the expert. Like, you tell me what I need. And they're like, but I don't know anything about you. Like, I don't know if you're allergic to this stuff. Like, I don't know what to give you if you don't tell me what you like. And we have this constant stalemate of nobody gets what they want. Because, and there's a negative relationship and a simple toleration of each other because we can communicate. That was like the biggest problem I wanted to solve with my company, was just like, let's make our menu super clear and let's tell people you want this if these conditions are present for you. Like, if you feel this way, then this is probably the right solution. So I think a part of it is having that open dialogue, because a CPA or a tax pro or a professional, their work will only be as good as the information you give them. Yeah. So you also have to have a really good grip on that information and how to communicate it. Have goals, be willing to communicate them, be unapologetic about your goals. I literally had a CFO client who was like, I want to make $2 million because I want to give my dad the middle finger because he told me I'd never amount to anything. And I was like, okay, cool. Let's go do that. And that's exactly what happened. Like, I have no judgment on why you have this goal. I don't care. Let's go make you $2 million so you can go give your dad the middle finger. In fact, take a picture. Like,
I'm obsessed. I mean, okay, that is a perfect segue because we're talking a lot about CPAs and tax accounting. We talked a little bit about bookkeeping. It could be you, your husband, your partner, whatever, and you're tracking your spending. But financial strategy is a whole different thing. And that's really what you specialize in. And I want to know first to start, I think you teed it up perfectly, that no judgment zone. How do CFOs think about money differently than regular people?
Money is a tool. You know, we actually look at it. So if you think about fitness, if you're familiar with like just the overall approach to fitness, I think weight is a sensitive subject, just like money is, right? Mm-hmm. But when you look at fitness and you look at calories in, calories out, it's just data. So if you're going to go on a diet or if you're going to go into an exercise program, you're going to start looking at metrics like BMI, your weight, your measurements, your, you know, calories in, calories out, your macros. This is my favorite one, is looking at the macros. And I say, we have no stigma around our macros. In fact, we have MyFitnessPal, we have Whoop, we have like that. We have all of these things that tell us our data and we're not scared of it. Mm-hmm. So why we slap a dollar sign on this thing and now it's terrifying. Mm-hmm. So when it comes to financial strategy, the way CFOs look at this differently is we look at money the same way you look at calories, the same way you look at any other unit of measurement. It's just in dollars and cents. So we look at these numbers and we say, well, the math is mathing, you know, like we're going up or we're going down and we need to pivot decisions. We try not to add too much emotion to it. I know money is emotional, but I think when you can look at it as factual instead of feeling based, it definitely helps the approach of just making strategic decision making as opposed to thinking of it as you're personally going to be hurt if it's trending downward. I go, no, feedback's a gift. That means we should pivot this way and it will go up. What a great way to get feedback and be able to make decisions and change our behavior. You know, it's like you gain a pound on your diet program and you're like, oh my God, this is terrible. It's like, it's part of the process. It's all part of the process.
100%. It's about decoupling your worth from your money, right? It's like the dollar sign or the number on the scale doesn't tell you how valuable you are as a person, but because money has value, we inherently assign ourselves to it, the measurement of our success or the measurement of our worthiness. And the thing that I love about financial strategy, especially when you talk about it, Shannon, it's like a game. It's a puzzle. It's like, which levers are we going to pull to make this outcome happen? So tell us about some of those different levers and the different tools that you use to do that. Like, can we start with cash flow? It might be my favorite.
Yeah. So cash flow is money metabolism, right? So that's the speed and the velocity at which you bring money in and you pay money out, simply. Mm-hmm. Cash flow is the movement. You know, there's cash balance going up and down. You can look at your bank account, like you look at your scale in the morning and say, you know, that's the other thing too. If you look at the scale in the morning and you say, I weigh X number of pounds, that doesn't tell you you are overall healthy or not healthy. That's just a single point that will change after you use the bathroom. Okay. Like that's going to change. So it's the bank account balance too will fluctuate. You're going to pay off a credit card today. It's going to change in 10 minutes. So you can't assign too much value to spot metrics. That's the key thing. And I think that the way you have to look at this strategically is understanding that you have to be future focused and you have to be looking at cash flow as opposed to single metrics of your bank account. So when we talk about cash flow, what you actually want to do, and I would highly recommend, this was the gateway to me quitting my job. So this was a really powerful tool. And we actually have one. We have a household cash flow in addition to my business cash flow. My business cash flow is one of the lines on the household cash flow, but the household cash flow looks like this. We look at our bank account balances, you know, our joint accounts, our individual accounts, whatever. And then we map out what's all the money coming in over the next, say, 6 to 8 weeks. We have a column for every week. And we say, money coming in. So it's paychecks. It's rental income from short-term rentals or long-term rentals. Like it could be, you know, your business profit distributions. It could be anything, right? It could be interest that comes in. So that comes in. And then we go into when are all the bills getting paid? When are all the credit cards getting paid? When is the mortgage due? And it's infusing timing into these ins and outs. Because I know you can say, well, overall, we make money every month. Aha. But if the mortgage is due before the paycheck comes in, we have a problem.
Right.
So we have to look at the timing of these things and make sure that the rhythm is good, where you're maintaining a rhythm in your cash balance. But also, if your cash dips down, like if you have like a few hundred bucks in the bank account at the end, just knowing that, well, in 2 days, I'm going to have an influx because I know it's all part of the plan. It's all part of the plan. Like, this is all part of the system that we built, and I know what my cash balance is going to be. It takes a lot of that stress away when you just know that was all part of the plan all along.
I'm obsessed. That is exactly what I was getting to, which is that forecasting, just the knowledge and understanding that money is coming in, it alleviates that fear, that fight or flight. Like, oh my God, crap, I only have this much money. Like, what bills are due? If you take the time to plan it out and you map it, and you can literally do this with a piece of paper and a pen to understand when you get paid and when bills are due. And by the way, if it doesn't work out, call your people, call your mortgage company, call your credit card company, and you can change the due dates of your bills so that it flows better, so that you're never feeling too stressed out, because our whole goal here in Old Money is to eliminate the chaos, eliminate the fear around money. Because when we're in a state of fear, chaos, and stress, we don't make good decisions. So understanding that cash flow is just about timing. And it's just about, you know, if you're a woman listening to this, you know, you weigh a different amount every single day of the month, right? There's never 2 days that you weigh the same if you're fluctuating like I do anyway. Your bank account's going to be the exact same way. But at the end of the day, I know that my average is okay, right? And that's what cash flow does. It just kind of eliminates that worry, that stress, that fear, that oh fuck moment where you forgot that you had something due.
Exactly. And the predictability is key in you taking power and ownership back away from it, because you know that that's exactly my intention. It's working as it should. And you don't even have to look at it because you know that it's working the way it should be. And that's really the peace that it brings you. Is ultimately what you want is the peace from having to not worry about it as much. And that is true financial freedom and true wealth in my mind when you don't have to check it.
1000%. What's another tool as a CFO that you implement with your clients that our listeners could kind of think about in their own day-to-day life?
I would say that's my favorite, hands down. That doing that alone, honestly, if you take one thing away, is probably paramount to you managing your money better. But I would say also looking at, you know, we also do this thing. We actually do a net worth calculation as a family, me and my husband. So in terms, it's like our personal balance sheet. So hear me out. Like, if you don't know what balance sheets are, it doesn't matter. This sheet is basically where all our money is and where we want it to be. So for example, I know that Amber talks about this on Old Money. We talk about different ways to invest and things like that. We look at how much is in cash, how much is in real estate, how much is in fun investments like other businesses, creative alternative investments. We look at how much is in, say, the stock market or retirement accounts, and we have targets. We go, we want our pie chart to look like this, and we don't want to have too much in here, too little in here. We both agree. Now, me and my husband have a great relationship around money and communicating that, where we're like, let's just set a tone of like, what do we want, where we want our money to be right now. And he leans on me a lot in my expertise, but we also have this open conversation. So this is paramount number one, is like, you have to be able to craft this together. You don't have one person dictate it. Number two is, once we worked on that, we were like, okay, every single, we try to do it every month, sometimes every other month. We look at where all the money is right now. And we go, is it meaning its job description? It's almost like doing a performance review. Every dollar has a job description of what it's supposed to be doing. Let's do a performance review, check in. Are all the dollars working where they're supposed to be? Is everybody on the clock working? And is too much in cash where we need to deploy some over here? If we're looking at an investment opportunity for, say, real estate, we're like, okay, if we move it over here, are we throwing the whole thing off? Are we skewing everything where now all of our wealth is in dirt, you know, dirt and buildings? We have to just make sure that we are investing in things we know, number one, but investing in things that we are intentional about doing so that we don't get ahead of ourselves. We don't over-index on certain things. We have a good strategy, but it really, we are so peaceful about it because it's simple. It's like we decided to create this little pie chart, kind of like the macros, right? What's fueling our wealth?
Right.
Three things. This is our ideal healthy range of where our money is. Are we in our healthy range or not? And then making objective decisions on scorekeeping that and saying, are we in our range or not? It's a binary. If we're not, what would we need to do in order to get it in a healthy range? Or what do we want to change about the range to accommodate this new strategy? And if you just look at it like that decision tree and answering those questions one by one, it simplifies it significantly.
And it takes all of the charge away from it, which I think is really important.
all the guesswork of like, is this okay? What does good look like? Because good looks like something different for everyone. So the first thing is deciding what good looks like for you, and the rest is easy.
1000%. And so again, relating this back to a business, it's like your balance sheet. And for people that are listening, if you don't yet know, we have free resources on oldmoneypodcast.com/net worth. We have a free net worth tracker template. And that tracker template allows you to put in all of your assets and your liabilities, and it calculates it at the bottom to see what your net worth is doing. If you're following the old money protocol, which includes automatic investing, automatic savings, the piece that net worth tracker gives you is that when you check it, I check mine every 90 days, without me doing a single thing, my net worth grows. And that is peace of mind that you just cannot pay for, because it's, again, like, okay, it's going in that direction up. That's like the GPS. I want to go to this dollar amount at retirement, or this goal, or this yacht is the one that I want to charter out, whatever it is, I'm on the direction. And so knowing that that's happening in the background of my life, you guys, that is financial strategy. Shannon, I want to ask you about another thing too, because one of the things that you do so much better than most CFOs that I know and most financial advisors that I know, because I know a lot of them, is that you're creative AF. And one of the things that you're really creative with your clients is looking at whatever problem they have or whatever goal they have, and then figuring out a way to get there. And the example that I'm thinking of in my head is when you had, I don't know if it was like a cash flow or an inventory issue or something, and you did this big flash sale and it generated all of this money for a client. Tell us about, and you don't have to use that specific example, but tell us about how thinking creatively creates more freedom for your clients.
Yeah. So it's so funny because creativity and accounting usually don't mix. They're like oil and water. Right. So if you say creative accounting, we were actually taught, by the way, we were taught in accounting school, in business school, we were taught that, like, if you hear the words creative accounting, run, it's probably a crime.
Fraud. That's what it sounds like.
Yeah. Like, I think you're not allowed to call your firm Creative Accounting Solutions or something, because it implies that, like, you're going outside the boundaries of the law. Like, they're really big on that. So number one, it's funny to be called creative, which I love. But number two is, what we do is we get scrappy, we get resourceful, and we say, okay, we see a problem. The next step is, what lever can we pull to solve that problem? But what are the different levers that are available to you? But which one is colored bright pink that you're going to go grab? Like, which one's the one that just stands out to you as like, yeah, I can definitely do that, and I could do that today, and it would move the needle. That's the big thing, is when we say creative, we say we present all these options of, here are the different things you could do. But in that particular case, one of the things that stood out was, we have this brand that we work with that sells, they're e-commerce and they sell apparel. And we wanted to pull that lever for them, but there was also this idea of, well, we could just do a big flash sale. And they were like, we don't discount our products. We don't do any sort of discounts like that, only for the affiliates. And I said, okay, hear me out. Buy one, give one campaign for Mother's Day, or for something with your mom or your friend or your sister or whatever, accessories, because we need to offload accessories. We had these MOQs that were ridiculous, which is minimum order quantities. So they had a bunch in stock that they had to get rid of. And I go, it's costing us more in storage at this point to have these here. You could basically give them away. Can we throw them into packages that, of existing orders? And they said, oh, I don't want to just do that because we are charging for them. I said, okay, let's do the buy one, give one campaign. Guess what? This is now going to become an annual thing probably, because it was so much fun to do. People really like tied into the campaign. But what we did was, we try to strategize it with them in mind, specifically saying they don't discount, they don't do sales, they don't give stuff away. So we can't pull those levers. But what if we could offload through a different type of on-brand campaign, which I know you appreciate as a marketer? It's like, how do you stay within the brand and still achieve the objective? So that's one of those ways we got creative with solutions, because we take the time to understand the client and go, that's not them. Like, they could do this. So for example, like on a weight loss journey, it's like, they could do keto. Like, they can't, they like bread. Like, like, they like bread too much. We can't do that with them. They won't actually do it. So when you think about creative solutions, it's really about knowing yourself and knowing the boundaries of what you're comfortable with and what is true and authentic to you.
I love that, again, because it shows me that framework that you have of complete non-judgment. You're not going to come into a business and be like, oh, you don't discount stuff? Well, I need you to move product and you need to make money, so start discounting.
Right.
That completely ruins the brand ethos. And I think what's interesting as humans is, we're talking about our household incomes and building wealth. a lot of us do put a lot of arbitrary rules on ourselves of things that we do or do not do. Well, I don't have time to get another job. I don't have time to list all my clothes on Depop. That's totally fine. I don't have time to list all my clothes on Depop either. That's a full-time job. But something that you can do that is really creative is maybe you can get together with four of your most stylish friends and have one afternoon where you all bring your stuff, you blast it all over social media, and you have like an estate sale for all the things that you're trying to get rid of once a year. And then you have something that's much more aligned with your personal brand. You have a new source of income to replenish your wardrobe with next season's stuff, but you're not spending your whole life taking photos and posing for Pop Shop or whatever that's called. Yeah. So I think one of the things that you do so well, Shannon, is you look at people's, not just goals, but like the inventory in your garage, for God's sakes. Like, what can you sell on Facebook Marketplace today that's going to get you closer to where you want to be? And how can I help you take action in that?
Exactly.
So for everybody listening, that is what financial strategy is. It's about being creative. It's about understanding where you are, the numbers, and then allowing those facts and figures to stand in front of you, just like a metric, just like a unit, like you said, like of weight or calorie or whatever, without any weight attached to it, really. And then making decisions that way.
Don't borrow from what other people are doing and just think that will apply to you as well. So just like you don't follow other people's workout programs, other people's medical programs, other people's diets, like you have to know your unique blend of chemistry or whatever that is to understand what will work for you. I actually just had a podcast talking about this with like, don't invest in what you don't understand. Take the time to educate yourself on what you want to do, but don't think you have to do all of the things to build wealth. Like, there are some great tactics out there that you can apply, but you have to know what you're comfortable doing. Like if you put money into something and you don't know how you make money back, don't do it.
Totally agree. I think that's such a good mindset piece too. And I actually want to touch on that with you, Shannon, because I think the other thing that I really admire about you is just your mindset around money and how you talk to your clients about it. You mentioned this at the top of our conversation, which was when you're planning for, you know, going to on your own or starting your own company, don't create a version of a budget that's you living on top ramen and scrambled eggs. It's what is actually the budget that you want to hit. And something that I've heard you talk about, which I find so interesting, is the mindset shift that happens when entrepreneurs or people are just not making enough money and how that influences their behavior. Can you speak to that for us?
Yes. So when you are feeling scarcity. So when you're feeling like you're not making enough money, you're basically going to the grocery store hungry. Okay. And the problem with going to the grocery store hungry is what? You buy, especially if you go into the grocery store hungry and broke, you're buying Top Ramen and and like Frosted Flakes or whatever. Like, you're buying stuff that is probably not healthy because you just need anything. Look at it this way. You know, when you're starving and you're driving and you're like, oh, look, a McDonald's, let's do that. Like, there's nothing wrong with that once in a while, but if you make that a habit, that's not exactly healthy. So what we don't want to be doing is flying through our driver's seat of our finances, just like ignoring the healthy habits and going, I'll pass McDonald's at some point. That's not how it works. You really have to be intentional about it and you have to be clear on what you want. Like, what are your goals and what will feed those goals? I think that's just like super important.
Mm-hmm. I think one of the things that's interesting in the conversation that I have with a lot of our listeners is the thought of earning more feels impossible. You know, your yes. whole strategy is keep what you earn. So how do you advise people? And is it just another lever that an entrepreneur can pull to earn more? What does that look like?
Yeah. And you know, it's going to sound overly simplistic, but like, you can earn more money. I think that there are levers, just like I always did with the inventory I talked about, where I say earning more money is a function of a couple of things. Like in business, we look at pricing, we look at terms, structure, recurring revenue, reoccurring revenue. So you have recurring revenue in the form of a paycheck, most likely. Mm-hmm. What are the other things that you could do? Exactly what you said about like the Pop Shop or whatever. Like, what are the other things you could do to earn revenue? Could you, like I taught fitness classes on the side just for fun, right? But mm-hmm. I also made money from that. Can you invest? Can you find other solutions, other things that you enjoy doing that also manage to pay you back financially, which would be optimal. Mm-hmm. And that's really key, is maybe finding ways to turn it into revenue generating opportunities. And like what you did, where you were literally like, well, I guess I'll call this a business now. I think a lot of people fall into business that way, but there's so many ways to earn income. And there's so many ways to stay competitive in what you earn that I think that people aren't maximizing that enough. They're not asking for raises. They're not, you know, trying to find other ways to earn. But when you can't control the earnings channel as much, when you feel like you're like, well, I'm kind of at where I'm at and I'm capped out and I don't make overtime and I only make a certain amount of money, then I go into the, well, now it's a cost play. Now we get to look at the other levers of where we could scale back without sacrifice. Like, do we need to add avocado every time? No. Do we need to do certain things? No. But obviously not sacrificing a ton. That's where you have to play that balance of your expectations against reality and just go, what do I need to change? What is the side of this equation that I think is easier to change for myself? And you, again, you have to know yourself. You just have to know what behaviors are easier for you to adapt.
Yeah. And I think one of the things I'm curious of your take on, Shannon, because we've both kind of come up in these different entrepreneurial circles together, right? Of starting together and then seeing how people have grown. And you now work with business owners that are making millions of dollars per year as just a minimum to be able to work with you. You're in all of these different networking groups. I want to caveat this by saying that entrepreneurship is not for everybody, but what do you see in the landscape of entrepreneurship right now? Like, what are people trying that is working? What are you seeing people doing that's failing?
So this is interesting. And this may be unexpected for you, Amber, to hear it, but what I'm actually seeing a lot of is people who are worried because they don't have an end game. So a lot of people are worried because they are going, okay, I have a business. It's kind of cash flowing. And I'm just trying to struggle to get basically my paycheck out of the business, extracting that out so that I can pay for lifestyle costs. But like, I'm tired of trading time for money. I'm tired of working my butt off in this business and going, what is this all for? Like, what is the end game? Like, do I just like do this until I run myself or it into the ground? Like, what's going to happen? I have a lot of business owners who are thinking about, you know, we were all taught this kind of idea that you retire at 65-ish. And they're like, I don't want to be running this for the next like 30, 40 years. I don't want to be doing that. It's already been 5 years and I feel like I've aged 50. What the hell? Like, I can't do this another 20 years. So we have to get out of that mindset of like, for business owners in particular, what the problem is they're coming to the realization that the lifetime in a business is not like your career. Like, you can't just be pedaling along and be like, everything's going to be fine for the next 20 years. Like, not a lot of people make it that far. So you have to be thinking about your exit plan and you have to be thinking about how it's going to contribute to your wealth goal. So a lot of people are realizing that, hey, I think I want to exit this business, and they weren't planning to, but they have to because they either have to make it cash flowing really passively, or they have to just say, you know what, I'd rather just get eaten up by a private equity company that can go do that for me. I'd rather be cash flowing out of it. I would rather just exit and build my wealth a different way. I'm tired. So I'm actually seeing a lot of that people are approaching this like, hey, my business wasn't the wealth building tool I thought it was, or at least it has been for a while, and I'm ready to turn off the machine and like sell the machine.
100%.
So I think that's an interesting trend I'm seeing, and we are helping with that too, but it's just like an interesting topic to go through that like, oh, it's not like a career. You know, it's not a forever thing. It's something that you definitely need to have a plan for how you're going to get out of it and what good looks like in terms of that, like where you want to get to before you exit.
So I'm calling this era that we're in right now, and this is the first time I'm publicly saying this, but I've coined it the post-girl boss renaissance, because in early 2014, everybody was like, be a girl boss, start a business, you have an Etsy store. And obviously over the course of the last 11 or so years, a lot of stuff, that tree has been shaken and people have hung onto the branches. Some people have grown their own trees. Some people have just fallen into the dirt, right? So we've seen that shake out. But over the last, you know, decade or so, people are now realizing things like, oh, you can't just be a girl boss and wing it through business. You have to have financial strategy. Oh, I can either give this to my non-existent kids, work until the day that I die, or sell it. Those are really your only three options when you have a business, right? And so it's this, I think, we've gone from like the Sophia Amorosos to like, you can do anything, start any business, be scrappy, to the Emma Greeds, who are like, no, I'm running legitimate businesses for all the Kardashians, I'm on Shark Tank, like that type of mindset of getting into this place of, we're going to take this shit real serious, real fast. And there's been a fast maturation of a lot of business owners that have gotten to that place being like, what am I going to do next? And here's what I want to say to everybody that's out there, that's maybe you're not an entrepreneur, or maybe you're in your first business. This is one of the terms I hate, but when people say I'm a serial entrepreneur, The reason people say that is because when you build a business, you should exit it and you should build another one because you do it better the next time. So there's always opportunity to go out there and explore more, and you'll learn from the first time. And then you hire somebody like Shannon who helps you pull all these levers. And then your second business, your third business, your fourth business is even more badass than the first.
Exactly.
I want to talk about one more thing with you, Shannon, before I let you go today, which is stress. We talked about this a little bit, and financial stress, and just overall how understanding things is going to alleviate your stress and your fear around money. How do you handle stress? How have you handled stress with Jason around money? Like, how have you guys dealt with that as a couple? And do you have any tips for our listeners on how they can minimize their money stress?
Yeah. You know, it's funny because so here's the thing. I've never been that stressed about money. In terms of, I look at it very objectively. I look at it as just like a thing that exists. I have never tied a ton of emotion around it. So with that, this is where I come from on it, is we manage stress around money. Like, if we're not sure what to do with money, or we're not sure where it's coming from, or we don't have enough to do X, Y, Z, we really just kind of ground ourselves in the facts, honestly. We try to speak in facts, not feelings. And I think if you have to start a sentence with, "I feel like," stop there and just go, okay, express your feelings, but let's talk in facts. What's actually happening? Where is the money? Where's it coming from? Where's it going? And like I said, dealing with money stress, I think that it goes back to my cash flow forecast, where you can minimize the stress because you won't have the volatile emotion of the uncertainty. And I think minimizing stress means minimizing uncertainty. You have to get a grip on where things are at and all the, where the chess pieces are, and just have the plan. And then when the plan is operating, it's less stress because, you know, it's all part of the process. And I think programming that for yourself is really the source of that.
That is so powerful. And I just, yes, the uncertainty is what causes so much stress. So if you are listening to this and you've taken the attachment archetype quiz and you are avoidant with your money, you're not looking at it, that's going to cause you more stress. If looking at your money causes you stress, you're anxious, it's going to cause you more stress. So we have to get to that place of secure attachment so that you can look at things objectively and make good decisions for yourself. Shannon, before I let you go, we have to do our rapid fire rich girl questions. You down?
Down.
Okay. What is a rich woman ritual that you love to do for yourself?
Ooh. Oh gosh. I think I would say getting my nails done, because I have this nail artist here in Costa Rica I just freaking love.
I knew you were going to say that. You always have your nails done perfectly.
Love it.
What is the last thing you invested in?
Ooh, good question. The last thing I invested in, our home build. Oh my God. This is crazy.
I'm so excited.
Home build, and you know all about that.
Oh, I'm so excited for you guys. Well, we're going to get to your socials in a second, but just the behind the scenes, I cannot wait to see. What does wealth mean to you today, Shannon?
Wealth means choice. Having the choice to do what you want when you want to, and that choice changing.
I love it. And our last one is, what in your life makes you feel the wealthiest?
I would say getting to spend time with Jason and Lola. And I would say my walks along the beach, just absorbing all of the things and just sitting in gratitude.
I love that. Shannon, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your wisdom with our audience, and for being my friend and sharing your wisdom with me all of the time. Can you tell everyone where they can come find you on socials, on podcasts, on all the things, so you can keep sharing your wisdom with them?
Yeah, I'll make it super simple. Anywhere you are, look for the words "keep what you earn." So it's at "keep what you earn" on Instagram, at "keep what you earn" on everything, and the "keep what you earn" podcast. You can also find my personal Instagram connected to that. It's at Shannon K. Weinstein. Follow along with all the things in Costa Rica. But "keep what you earn" is where it's at for all of the business stuff.
And that, my friends, is what we call a great brand. Shannon, thank you so much for your time. And everyone, thanks for listening. If you liked this episode, take a screenshot of it, put it on your stories, tag us. We want to see what you took home from it. We love you so much. Talk to you on the next one. Bye. Look at you investing in your rich life one episode at a time. You're not just listening, you're leveling up. If you have questions, comments, thoughts, or prayers, slide into my inbox at oldmoneypodcast@gmail.com or in my DMs on Instagram at oldmoneypodcast. If this episode made you laugh, think, or write down a single note, please do me a solid and rate, review, and subscribe. It takes less time than your morning scroll, and it helps this show reach more future millionaires. And speaking of growing the network, please share this with your ambitious bestie, your business buddy, or your secretly rich aunt. Please share the gospel of old money, and I will be more grateful than a trust fund kid on distribution day. Thank you for being here. I'm rooting for your bank account, and I will catch you on the next episode of Bold Money. Remember, I am not your lawyer, I am not your tax professional, and I am not your financial advisor. The content presented in this podcast is intended to entertain, educate, inspire, and support listeners and their personal and professional development, and does not constitute business, financial, or legal advice.